you a high performer, obsessed with growth, and looking for an edge? Welcome to Mind Body Peak Performance. Together, we'll discover underground secrets to unlocking the full potential of your mind, body, and spirit. We'll learn from some of the world's leading minds, from ancient wisdom to cutting-edge tools and everything in between. This is your host, Nick Urban. Enjoy the episode. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Mind Body Peak Performance with your host, Nick Urban. Today, I've got an electric one for you, pun intended. We're continuing our mini-series on alternative healing modalities, and this one will not disappoint. This week, we've got Dr. Bob Dennis on the show. He did original research work for NASA in 1996 on a technology abbreviated PEMF. As he describes in the episode, Dr. Dennis suffered a serious lower back injury as a firefighter in 2006. No mainstream medical options helped him, including oxycodone. So he modified his original work from NASA on PEMF into a portable device, and it completely eliminated his pain. So it became his life's calling to help people with serious debilitating pain who have no other options. But as you'll see in a minute, PEMF does much more than alleviate pain. It brings the body back into balance, and it can noticeably improve inflammation, immunity, athletic recovery, surgical recovery, wound healing, and all kinds of other things that Dr. Dennis describes in the show. Just like with ozone therapy, as we discussed with Michael Lau in the last episode, this is another one of those low-hanging fruit that I believe should be in the primary standard of care before resorting to heavy-hitting drugs and dangerous therapies. Of course, nothing in this show is ever medical advice, and I always suggest you talk with your medical practitioner before making any lifestyle changes. But I hope this gives you an avenue to research. But Dr. Dennis mentioned that he often hears anecdotes from surgeons that say their patients recover 2 to 3 times faster from surgeries when they use his PEMF devices. And since my dad just underwent a shoulder surgery and a knee replacement, I figured, where better to test this? So we ordered him a device that's currently being handcrafted, as all his products are. And if someone in your life suffers from a chronic condition, an injury, or a nagging health issue, check out his website, micro-pulse.com. And if you use the MindBody Peak Performance listener code URBAN, URBAN, that'll save you 10% on any of his systems. Ladies and gentlemen, sit back, relax, and enjoy this conversation with Dr. Bob Dennis. This morning, we're joined by Dr. Bob Dennis. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for inviting me. Glad to be here.
It's great to have you. So I want to change things up from my usual intro to the show. I want to start out with, if you were to summarize the topic of today's show, that is PEMF therapy, to a 5-year-old, what would you tell them it is and the benefits associated with it?
Oh, that's an awesome question because no one's asked me that. But that's almost the way that I think about it, actually. PEMF therapy is like this scientific surprise. That's what it was to me. And it's like almost anything you use it on that's alive functions better. It's weird. I can show you data that relates to, you know, humans and animals and even plants, even seeds. It's the strangest thing. And what's amazing is it's a scientific mystery. There's a lot of scientific mysteries out there. We don't know why it works that way, but we know how to make it work that way now. And that's, for now, that's good enough.
When it's working on animals and plants and other life forms that don't even realize what they're being exposed to, it's a compelling case that it's more than placebo.
That's correct. And I've actually tried to discuss this with friends of mine who are surgeons. I mean, I because of where I went to graduate school, University of Michigan, I worked with a lot of surgeons and I would tell them about this. I actually had the chairman of University of Michigan and chairman of UCLA plastic surgery. We were just going to go out for beers. We used to go mountain biking together and I told them about this and they said, no, it's placebo. And I said, well, you know, we've been able to show a reduction of inflammation with rats and everything, you know, that's placebo. They're like, well, you know, placebo is like 70% now or something. And I said, you're kidding me. Well, then I, you know, turned it on its head. I said, all we need to do is get placebo to be 100%. And we don't need anything else. Yeah. Right. Ah, they're so stuck in the way they're thinking about things. They really didn't even entertain the thought that maybe it could work. But I understand that mindset in a way, because I was that way. And then I did an experiment and I was like, no, this can't possibly work. This is when I did the experiment at NASA that as a consultant, and it wasn't supposed to work. So I was shocked, right? So we went back and redid it and lo and behold, it worked again. So it's this big surprise, but you have to be open-minded enough to actually look at the data.
So you went from being a skeptic and possibly creating the nocebo effect, minimizing the effects it could have, into testing it yourself at NASA and discovering that, lo and behold, it does work for certain things.
You are correct. So the really brief story is, actually, I got contacted by a guy at NASA because I knew some people who worked there, but I didn't really have any activity there. And he contacted me through friends and said, basically, hey, we'd like to put some cells on a space shuttle and see if PEMF can make them grow better. And I said, oh, you're kidding. Come on. This stuff's nonsense. So yeah, I did start as a skeptic and they said, no, we really want to try. Can you help? And I said, okay. And I did a really thorough job. I tried anyway to make it really double blind. So nobody knew what was going on with anything. And then at the end, we could just look at the data and it was really compelling. And it was on human neural cells in culture. Mm. And it had a huge impact on gene expression and the rate of growth and the growth density in, you know, culture dishes. No question about it. I mean, it was really big differences, but only for certain types of waveforms. So I thought, whoa, this is crazy. This can't be true. They must have done something wrong. So I took all the equipment back and I relabeled it and recalibrated, sent it back to them, redid the experiment. Sure enough, same thing. So yeah, I started as a skeptic. And that makes me, I think, much better at helping people with PEMF because I don't have any inclination to tell stuff that's not true. I mean, you know, I tried as hard as I could to prove I really did. And that's probably not really good in science even because I entered it with a bias. Really was trying to prove, as you said, sort of like the nocebo effect. I was trying to prove it just doesn't work. Come on, guys, let's quit. The harder I tried, the better it worked.
Uh-huh. Dr. Dennis, I think we should ground this in the benefits and the use cases of PEMF, how people are actually using it, and then also speculation as to how it's working, maybe not on the molecular level, but like when you say, I want to use PEMF therapy, what happens from my decision until I receive the benefits?
To discuss how people use it, I can tell you, well, I guess we could put a link down to it, to this. If you just prompt me at the end, I can send you an email. There's a journal that me and a colleague started. It's an actual peer-reviewed scientific journal called the Journal of Science and Medicine, JOSAM, J-O-S-A-M. And we published a survey that we did when we were at a meeting, at ACIM meeting down in Florida in 2019. I actually did the survey. And we asked that question of about 421 different people who attended the meeting. What do you use PEMF for? And the answer, believe it or not, is just about everything. Everything that I could list on the survey, dozens and dozens of things, very different. People said it worked actually well. So I think PEMF is a great, you know, individual method that you can use, but it's also a great, you know, adjunct method, and it goes really well with some things like acupuncture, chiropractic, stem cell therapy, stuff like that. Now, as a scientist, it's hard for me to say that because nothing's supposed to work for everything. Come on, right? And yet, that's what people tell me. And everything that I have tried on, it has a various kind of rate of success. When you try it on lower back pain, oh man, it's way over 90% effective. Really helps people, really helps me. I'm wearing one right now. That's why I started building them for my own lower back. But for headaches and stuff, it's maybe 60% effective. Different things, it's going to range. That's about the least effective for different things like orthopedic pain or just like, you know, inflammation and swelling. It's chronic. It works really well for that kind of stuff. Interesting pattern is that the older you are, person, get into your 50s and 60s, the more chronic and intractable the pain is. That means you've had it for a long time and nothing else works. The better PEMF will work for you. That's what's really wonderful about it. So if you're using it as like a 22-year-old competitive cyclist, it may help you with, you know, post, you know, workout swelling and stuff. And if you have an acute injury, but it generally doesn't have a lot of other subtle benefits that you can feel. But when you're like 60, people just really respond well. And I think it's because PEMF fights against chronic inflammatory conditions, which increases as you get older, right? So the older you get, the slower you heal and everything. But when you use PEMF properly, people start healing at a rate similar to when they were in their 20s or 30s. And I'm not just saying that, that's actually what the numbers tell me when we look at, you know, when we study it and everything. So, you know, the help that you get when you're younger from it is there. You can see it, but it's not nearly as profound as like a 55-year-old person who maybe has not been able to work for 10 years because they're way too much chronic pain and they can't even get out of bed. Those are the people who send me these glowing 10-page emails about, oh man, it really, you know, really saved my life. And I have more than I can count emails from people or messages sent to me by one means or another saying, you know, I was able to go back to work. I was able to, you know, one woman from Canada, her mother had to retire. Her mother's a nurse, had to retire, take care of her because she couldn't get out of bed. She had so much pain. Like half a year later, after using PEMF, she wrote me a note saying, thank you so much. She was going on a walking tour of Europe. Went from being bedridden. She could go back and get her job back as a teacher. She couldn't teach anymore because she couldn't stand up, couldn't go to school, you know. So really, the older you are, the more of an effect that it has. That would be the pattern that I see. And it seems to work for a lot of things, peripheral neuropathy as well as, you know, orthopedic injury and pain, right? So we have a forum. I'll ask Nick if he'll put a link down there, and you can actually get on the forum and you can ask. And I get on that forum every day, so I will answer questions. In fact, I was just about to answer one for a person who had like a pelvic floor issue, wanted to get our opinions. And before I could even write anything, we had two or three other users doing it. So it's a great forum. It's Flux Health. And you can, if you have any questions about any of that stuff, I can point you to papers or other people. The best thing for PEMF is not the science. It's the personal, you know, one by one demonstration of, yeah, this works. And you could say, well, it's placebo effect, right? But that person can usually, and this was part of my survey. Okay, if PEMF's a placebo effect, how many other things did you try first that didn't work? And the average is about 12 to 13. So people tend to use PEMF at the very end. I mean, the treatment of last resort, right? I don't know why, because it's so harmless and so helpful. They should do it first. That's my opinion. I keep trying to encourage people because it's like looking for your car keys. They are always the last place you look, right? Every single time. So you know, most of these people had tried 12 or 13 things before they tried PEMF. Why didn't the placebo effect work for any of those things? And it's because effects of PEMF are so profoundly more than the placebo effect that it just shows up, you know, statistically as a huge spike whenever you test it. It's not really, it can't be a placebo effect. A friend of mine who's a nurse down in Florida Atlantic University was doing her dissertation. She tested it on people with any kind of pain. And she said her findings were that it was 98% effective. Wow. 98% is not placebo effect. I'm sorry. Yeah. No matter how you want to rationalize it, right? So yeah, that's what we're talking about. Now,
would you say that it's fair to classify the different benefits into things such as recovering from workouts and surgery faster, pain reduction, inflammation reduction, and then a couple others?
Absolutely. In fact, I'd say the big classification would start with acute versus chronic. For acute stuff, it's kind of spotty. Yeah, it works really well for acute post-surgical recovery. Acute injuries, like orthopedic injuries, works really well for acute things of that sort that have a pre-robust immediate inflammatory effect. For chronic stuff, it works very well for most chronic issues that I know of. And people have tried it for all kinds of things. And, you know, I don't want to say that it will or won't work for something because that crosses the line. But people will have tried it for all kinds of things that I've said there's no information, there's no data. But they'll come to the end of the line and they'll say, I've tried everything else, might as well try this. And That's the distinction I would make. The older you are and the more chronic the problem is, the more that it involves inflammation, the better it works. The younger you are and the more that it's an acute issue that's not really has an inflammatory component, the less benefit you get from PEMF. That's the pattern that I see.
I see. I think people have heard of EMFs at this point, and PEMF is EMF with P tacked on the front of it. What would you say the difference is?
I would say that EMF, electromagnetic fields, is everything that's electromagnetic in space. That includes, you know, ultraviolet rays and, you know, gamma rays and radio waves. But it also includes healthy things like sunlight and warmth, radiated warmth. That's electromagnetism, believe it or not. The signals that go through your nerves. So electromagnetism is required for life. But just like water, you know, is required for life, it, you know, it can harm you too, right? If you drop a block of ice on your head, or if you inhale water, there's bad ways to use water, right? Yeah. And even if you get too much, you can get water toxicity because it can wash out too many electrolytes. So, you know, the right stuff, use it the right way, can be very helpful. Otherwise, it can be very harmful. So PEMF, because of the way it's used, that term is used, it's used kind of like for the clinically, biologically helpful range of PEMF, which is fairly narrow compared to all possible electromagnetic fields.
Uh-huh. But what makes some of the electromagnetic fields harmful and others healthy?
Oh, in some cases, we really know, like extreme ultraviolet, right? It's ionizing, right? Mm-hmm. So it can cause burns, you know, sunburns and stuff. If you use a little bit less and a little bit different wavelength, it can actually energize and sort of drive forward the synthesis of vitamin, you know, D3, right? So it's not just the type of it, of electromagnetism, but it's also the intensity. Warmth that you would get from a campfire, it can be not enough if you're too far away, and it can be way too much if you're too close, but it's the same wavelength, right? It's a question of intensity and wavelength. Now, there's some that don't seem to be beneficial for life, like radio waves and, you know, 5G and all that kind of stuff. The question is it harmful? Mm-hmm. And I think the vast majority of radio waves are probably harmless. They probably, because the universe is filled with them. We get blasted all the time when we're outside. As organisms, we've probably developed things to avoid or just shrug off certain kinds of electromagnetism. On the other hand, some stuff has been generated in our background synthetically just in the last 50 or 60 years. And maybe that's harmless, you know, but maybe it's harmful. It's hard to say, right? And I don't see really good experiments, you know, long-term exposure experiments that will tell us that. I think people are kind of speculating. On the other hand, we know that electromagnetism can have an effect on living systems. So we need to find out what that effect is before we just start filling our environment with it.
Yeah, And we've known that for a while, going back to Robert Becker's work and the body electric and even before that.
Well, we've known that for a long time, and you can prove it now. I mean, sunlight, like I say, is electromagnetism. It has an effect on. I have sort of the converse argument with hardcore scientists, right? They will say electromagnetism has no effect on living organisms. And I just go down a list of, yes, it does here and here and here and here. And, you know, there's a whole field called electrophysiology that I worked on when I was a graduate student. We know it has an effect. It's just the question is, how much, under what circumstances, is it good, is it bad? You know, there's a hormesis effect, right? A little bit of something can be quite beneficial, whereas too much can be bad for you. And this is true for like nuclear radiation, believe it or not. A little tiny bit seems to suppress certain problems, even cancers and stuff. Too much, of course, will kill you, right? So saying that it's either good or bad is even not accurate. You got to look at the dosage, right? So it's a complicated question, but it's, you know, that's what scientists are supposed to do. We're supposed to take that apart and look at it. But almost every scientist you talk to is either on one end of the spectrum, it's really, really good for you, or it doesn't do anything, or the other end of the spectrum, it's, you know, really harmful. And what you need are a bunch of scientists in the middle saying, okay, well, let's roll up our sleeves and figure it out. Yeah. But there's not very many. There's not very many of us.
Yeah. More interesting debates when you have scientists on either side vehemently defending their position.
Well, you get really interesting debates about it, but sometimes they're not very helpful because people stop. There's an actual phenomenon called mind freeze, where people just won't listen to things. And they won't, they won't look at any data contrary to their belief. And see, like, had I looked at the data for NASA and just said, no, you know, I'm just not going to believe it, then I would have missed the entire field completely. And it would have been, you know, my loss. And, but, you know, some people would have just thrown that out. And a lot of scientists, when they do an experiment and it doesn't work, they, what that means is it doesn't turn out the way they expected. They just throw it out. And that's a really big problem in science. Did you know that that's about 80 or 90% of the science that we pay for in universities as taxpayers is never published because it didn't turn out the way that a scientist expected it to. So that's a huge problem. Yeah, it's called it's part of what's called publication bias. People just don't want to publish things that turn out negative. Sometimes a negative result is exactly what you need to know. Does this work? Well, no, that's an actual answer, right? Like looking for your car keys. Gee, did I leave them in a refrigerator? No. Okay, that's a good answer. They're not there, right? But people, a lot of people just don't see things that way. And that, I think that has caused us to miss a lot of really useful information.
One of my own biases is that I like to learn about this kind of stuff and I come across ideas. And one that you changed my mind on is something called the Schumann resonance.
Mm-hmm. I wish the stories about that were true. I really do. That would be super cool because that's something we could study and everything. But as Nick is referring to, he and I discussed this offline. Schumann resonance is real, right? It's a real phenomenon. It's every time lightning strikes somewhere on Earth, it causes the ionosphere to change its shape a little bit. So it rings like a bell, like a really big bell about the diameter of the Earth plus, you know, 100,000 feet diameter. And the thing is that that's real, but it's really hard to detect. It's really hard to measure. And as far as we can tell, that doesn't have any direct effect on biology. So that's actually a fraudulent claim that was made by a guy that I know that was trying to sell PEMF to people and making it sort of pseudo-scientific. And he made claims about, you know, he was, you know, he would say when we were up on the space shuttle, he was never up on the space shuttle. And I mean, I know about this because the time period over which these experiments were supposed to have been done, late 90s, early 2000s, I was actually very active consultant for NASA. One of my colleagues was the senior visiting scientist for the International Space Station. Another one of my colleagues had spent more time in orbit than any other American. Wow. And he was ahead of, you know, he was in the astronaut office and, you know, he actually ran the laboratory where I was doing the, you know, experiments in PEMF. So I kind of knew people related to this kind of research. None of us knew had heard of any of this, right? But on the internet, people were claiming, oh, NASA's written 2,000 papers on the effects of, you know, Schumann resonance and this and that. No, nothing like that was ever written. And it's just sort of one of these urban myths. It's no basis to it, but it was used to try to leverage the credibility of NASA to convince people to buy PEMF. And of course, the systems were all overpriced. But the interesting thing is that if you set PEMF to a Schumann resonance, like 7.82, it actually works pretty well biologically. But if you set it to a different frequency, it also works pretty well biologically.
Guys, if you're getting value from this, if you know someone that could use PEMF, go ahead and share this with them. And Dr. Dennis, so it sounds like what you've had to do then over time is iterate without knowing the exact mechanism of how it's going to impact the body.
Yes, it's totally experimental. And that turns out that's how we have found many, maybe even most of the things in nature, you know, nutrients and, you know, just things in our environment. We've found through experience that they are helpful and that they're sometimes they're just absolutely necessary. So we find that by sometimes by random chance, but you can actually look systematically as well. And when I calculated the possible number of electromagnetic pulses and patterns that you could have, I have actually published this. If you look at the JOSAM magazine, we'll have, you know, it's a journal, scientific journal. I'll have a link to. I actually publish it. It's 1 quadrillion different ones. It's an enormous number. It's like 1 with 15 zeros or something after it. You can't possibly test each and every one. So what you do is you have to break them into categories, right? And it's sort of like a game of 20 questions, right? I can play this with my 10-year-old daughter. I'll say, I'm thinking of something. And she break it. Is it animal or mineral or something else? If you keep, it's called a binary search, right? If you keep cutting the universe in half, how many questions do you have to ask to come up with the answer, say a paperclip? It turns out it's about 20, right? How many times do you have to divide the entire universe into half, whatever it is? Oh, it's a metal, you know, do people own them or not? You know, yes, right? You can narrow down billions or trillions of things to one thing if you start a group and you keep cutting it in half cleverly, right? And that's what I did for about 10 years when I started on PEMF. What part of the electromagnetic spectrum is actually biologically active? And when I did that, I was able to find a magnetic pulse that is only about 0.2% of a sine wave that actually works. And the rest of the sine wave doesn't really work. Or the same thing for like a large square wave. It's less than 1% of that total energy is actually what you need. And that if you carefully design a PEMF system, you can narrow it down to only the electromagnetism that you need that's biologically active, that's beneficial, and not have the rest of it. And does that make a difference, right? Well, yeah. If it only takes 1/500th of the power, then, you know, it doesn't need to be plugged in the wall. You can run it on a battery, right? Because it's, you know, battery only has a very small fraction of the power you can get out of a wall outlet, right? And also, what are the chances of it harming you if it's 1/500th of the energy, right? It's much lower. So, yeah, it's... Well, that was all done sort of with a combination of knowing the engineering and the science of, okay, what's likely to cause something to happen. And then doing experiments to keep cutting it down. Okay, it's not this half, it's this half. Okay, looking at that half, if I cut that in half again, it's this quarter, it's not that quarter. And by doing that systematically, you can actually do what I've done in the last 10 or 15 years, which is narrow it down to a pretty simple waveform.
Yeah. I first came across your products from a friend of mine, Quantified Bob Troya. And he mentioned that he had broken his ankle. And he picked up one of your devices. And within a couple of weeks, he was back on the field playing soccer again. So that's what sparked my interest. And there seems to be a lot of variation in the quality and especially the cost between different systems in the market.
Oh, Absolutely. So when I entered the PEMF market, okay, 15 years ago, because I was not running a business and I was not looking, you know, I was just a scientist, right? I work on grants and contracts and stuff. But about 15 years ago, I started to learn enough about PEMF that I could see it was a really kind of a fraud. It was rife with fraud. And just as a scientist, I would read the marketing materials and I would say, they can't know that. There is no paper. They're making claims that they cannot prove, that they can't even support with even the tiniest shred of evidence. Mm-hmm. And yet some PEMF devices were working and some weren't. So there was this culture built around PEMF where people thought, well, gee, if I could just explain the science, then people will buy it. And then a lot of people started selling PEMF devices, you know, based on NASA research. Well, honestly, I was the guy who did that research. You can see it on US patent and trademark, you know, USPTO.gov. You know, I'm on the patents. I get paid royalties if anybody ever uses that from NASA. So I'm the guy, I can prove it. But they didn't use any technology I had developed. So every single other PEMF system out there, like when I got into it 15 years ago, after I'd done the NASA work in the late 90s, they were lying about the sort of the pedigree of their PEMF. Most of them were just using like a rebranded old systems from Eastern Bloc countries. Like if you ever see anything that's like, you know, that's like spark gap technology, that's just, that's technology from before vacuum tubes. It's like 130, 140 years old. That it's just the way they used to make really big, powerful, noisy pulses. Boy, if you have trouble with EMI, like, you know, EMF, stay far away from anything that's spark gap, because that's the noisiest possible source of electromagnetism. But, you know, a lot of companies, a lot of people were making these claims. And then because they had all this, because PEMF worked, and because B, they were drawing in sort of scientific credibility that wasn't really appropriate. When I entered into it, like a typical PEMF system was about $20,000 to $50,000, right? Way too expensive. And so, you know, because I knew how to boil it down to something that worked, you know, it's a couple hundred, you know, a few hundred dollars is enough to really get a good PEMF system. You don't have to pay $50,000. So I think that some of the work that I've done in the last two decades has been to try to lower the bar for the cost of these systems, because really most of the really big ones at that time were really fraudulent, based on really, really old technology and repackaged as if it was new, but it wasn't. I think a lot of the newer PEMF systems now use the waveforms and everything that I defined working with NASA, and they seem to work better. You know, so I think I've had a positive impact on the whole field, but there's still a lot of misrepresentation. People are saying that they know the science or that they're supported by science, that it's just not there. Mm-hmm.
So two questions. First, what do you look for if you, knowing what you do, looked at a bunch of different systems, how would you discern whether or not they were good systems? And also, what makes your digiceuticals, that line, ICES line, unique?
I'll do it sort of the opposite order of your question. So I call it ICES, which stands for inductively coupled electrical stimulation. Why electrical? Because the magnetic field going through a cell causes an inductive reaction, causes an electrical flow around your cells. That's not a guess. We can calculate that. That's something electrical engineering wise, we know that must be happening, because that's how all devices work around you. That's how the technological universe works, is on that understanding. Yeah. How the cells respond to that, that's what we don't know. So we don't know the biological half of that equation, but we absolutely know the electrical engineering physics half of that equation. So ICES and Digiceutical, I trademarked them. Do you know why? Because that way I could make a very specific definition that I know was biologically active. And because they're trademarked, you can't have other people using those words, those designations, or they're in violation of trademark. So it's just like SD cards, that's actually trademarked. And they can say, okay, these cards work properly and they meet certain standards. And if you put them in your computer with like a proper, you know, USB, it's going to work. So that's why I trademarked it, so that I can say, okay, this, I can say this is going to work biologically and this not. So if somebody wanted to use the waveforms that I've defined, which are all patented, but I'm happy to, you know, let people use them and license them or just work with them, you know, I can also say, yeah, it conforms to that. So that's the way I use trademarks, to try to say, I know these will work, as opposed to, I'm not sure, as opposed to, yeah, I know these don't work, right? So there's those three categories. So I can tell you what will work. And most EMF manufacturers don't actually focus on what will work. They focus on what's going to sell. And so what sells is, you know, the maximum Gauss rating, which actually is a really bad way to tell whether or not a PMF system is going to work. If you want maximum Gauss, all you have to do is buy one of those new rare earth element magnets, and they'll give you, you know, 100 times the Gauss that you get from any PMF system, and they can do it for like $1.90, right? So that's not what you don't want. Peak Gauss, you want the right wave form. Most people don't have the scientific background to go through and say which system's going to work. And frankly, some people have a problem that's going to work better from some systems and than others. And, it, you know, it's kind of variable because people are variable and their responsiveness is different. And I'm not really in a position to write a table of, you know, hey, here's a good system and here's not a good system. So it's sort of like buying a car or a TV or something. Part of it comes down to people that you know and trust. Have they tried it, and does it work for them? Mm-hmm. And this is why for my company, we spend $0 on marketing, and we do everything by word of mouth and by me giving interviews, right? So all I try to do is give people honest information, and that's remarkable. People really respond well to that. So the thing to look for is, are you really dealing with a reputable company? Because some of the PMF companies are sort of almost like a weird kind of cult-like organization. Yeah. They want to get you all, you know, excited and pumped up about it. And what I do is kind of dry and scientific by design, because I don't want to entice anyone to purchase anything on the basis of, you know, being drawn in emotionally, right? I want people to think about it. So how would I tell? Well, you know, ask around. If you ask a clinician who has a PEMF system, they're going to give you the bias towards that system. If you ask people what works, they're going to give you a bias towards what they've paid for. So you have to kind of factor those biases in. But if you go to our forum, people talk about it all the time. And I encourage people to talk about it when the system that I sell doesn't work for them. I encourage them to talk about it. Say, well, you know, what circumstances did you use it under? So if all you're seeing is cherry-picked testimonials, I'd be a little bit skeptical. Yeah, and that's the word I was searching for. Yeah. I'd be a little bit skeptical. But if you see somebody kind of trying to give you a balanced view and they're not trying to make up the science, like using all kinds of pseudoscientific words like, oh, you know, quantum effects and stuff, they're probably there. We don't know. We have no idea yet. We don't know how to measure it. Mm-hmm. So if they're telling you it's zero point energy, quantum effects, stuff like that, yeah, anything that sounds sort of pseudoscientific, it probably is. So on the other hand, you know, bad marketing does not mean that the product is bad. So if you got a bunch of friends or people that you trust, say, this is, no, this thing really works. Yeah, borrow one and try it. Try a few before you buy anything. Right?
Yeah.
That's what I would do.
Yeah. So on your site, I noticed there's a couple different systems that look the most popular. The first is your A9, and then the other is your C6, I want to say, C5. And what's the main difference other than the portability? One's like the size of my palm and the other is like a desktop unit. Why would I choose the desktop unit over the other?
So, I mean, I put them all together myself. So I have bits and pieces of them. Here's an A9 that I'm developing for Bill Pollock. It's pretty small, fits in your hand. It's about half the size of a deck of cards. It's 70 grams, really light. Takes a 9-volt battery. All it does is you can turn it on, power switch, and you can set the intensity from low, medium, high, or extra high. Very simple to use. It was like the first really commercially viable one that I made. So this is like generation six PEMF technology, you know, ICES PEMF technology. That's generation six. And it's, I think it's very effective. I use them all the time myself, but it only has one pulse pattern. That's the Omni 8 that seems to work best for everyone, for everything. Then there is, and I don't have one in a case, but I've got one here. This is the M1, which also has a single output here. And it's got about 30 different pulse patterns, but always the same waveform, because it's the waveform that matters. Now, different people use the different pulse patterns for different things, like sleep or, you know, peripheral neuropathy or, you know, musculoskeletal orthopedics. So different people, and different people respond to it differently. Different people will absolutely swear up and down that a certain pulse pattern helps them sleep, but it's very different for different people. You know, I was at a meeting one time where there were three people waiting to talk to me, and they all wanted to talk to me about inducing sleep. And they started talking to each other and they started arguing. They're like, theta wave works. No, it doesn't. I tried that. It doesn't work for me. Mm-hmm. One that works for me is delta wave. Theta wave keeps me away, you know? So different, the thing is different people work different, you know, they respond differently. And so if somebody tells you they have a special secret pattern, pulse pattern, yeah, they're just lying to you. Right. They're just trying to sell you something, but I put, you know, 30 different ones on here, and then you can pick, but it's got a single output, and then a C5.
Why would you choose the other one, the A9, over the M1?
This one is less expensive. I think it's about 400 and a little bit, and doesn't have as much processor power as this one, which has much more adjustability. And this one's about, I think it's about $600. You know, I make them all by hand. I could mass produce them and sell them as a commodity, but that's not what I do. And maybe someday that'll happen. The price will drop a little bit, but then nobody'd be able to talk to me. And, you know, if I have 500,000 customers, I can't talk to everybody. Right. But I do actually, at this point, anybody who's a customer of ours or even a potential customer, I'll talk to them, you know, but you can't do that when you're selling millions of things, but you can when you're selling thousands. So I have, you know, I've talked to maybe probably 8,000 or 10,000 different people about this over the last, you know, 10 years or so. And then the C5, which is in this case, but it's a different color, it's exactly four of these circuits, but the C5 has four outputs. See what I'm saying? So, and they're all clocked together. They're not separate. So it allows you to do four separate areas, or you can add them together and make a pad and do whatever. So it gives you more power. You plug it in. Generally, you plug it into the wall, uses more power. It gives you, it's a little bit more flexible for people. Like, that's what I sleep with. I just have one on the side of my bed, you know? And so I try to make it so that depending on how a person wants to use it, they can use it that way. Now, I've designed this one. It's got like a little USB tail on it. It's a C5 or B5. And you can generally plug that into one of those USB power banks. You know, it's just a rechargeable battery. You can walk around with this all day. And there are people who put them in their purse or a fanny pack or something and walk around with these. I don't do that because it's too heavy, I think. But yeah, people use it as portable PEMF. Works great for them. That's what they tell me. And usually I think the thing about our system is that we rarely sell just one. Almost every one of our customers owns four or five, and they just keep coming back. They keep coming back because my business focus, I'm not a businessman, but my business focus is, okay, everybody who believes in me enough to pay money and they need the help, I will help them. So my focus is on our existing customers, not on trying to get new customers. It's not like businesses, they really used to be bad this way. Like your cable company would give you these great offers, but only if you were a new customer. And I call it cable company, and why not give it to your existing customers? Oh, well, we've already got you as a customer. No, you want to take care of your existing customers, right? Yeah. And this is why so many companies, you know, credit card companies, cable companies, even car companies, they lose customers to the competition, right? So that's, to me, that makes no sense. The thing to do is focus on the people who trust you and believe you and try to help them, right? And so Most of the people who are on our forum, most of the people I've sold these things to, they have a lot of experience because they and everybody in their family uses them. They get a bunch of them and different models. So there's a lot of people who have a A9, a M1, and a C5, for example, very commonly. And they use it for different things, right?
Yeah. My dad just had a knee replacement, and I want to convince him to look into PEMF for himself and pick up a system. Would the A9 or M1 be sufficient?
Anything like that would be perfect for a knee because it's easy for a knee to put coils on opposite sides. So here's a couple coils, right? Let me just pull one up. So you can put coils across the knee or in front and back of the knee and get a really good effect. And I can tell you post-surgically, we know because we've measured this post-surgically and with even with metal implants, which surprised me. I thought it would screw it up, but no, metal implants, especially titanium, doesn't seem to be a problem. Titanium or stainless, no problem. And that's what they implant in people, that or plastic. But it seems to accelerate healing post-surgically by a factor of 2 to 3.
Wow.
And this is not just a number I pulled out of the sky. It's like when we ask surgeons to compare post-surgical what they call milestones, like how many days or weeks does it take to achieve wound closure and this and that, things they can measure. Yeah, it's about 2 to 3 times faster if you use PEMF. So the other thing is that very frequently, we found this doing a study in Egypt, believe it or not, like 15 years ago for people for craniofacial surgery, really painful stuff. The amount of pain medication use dropped almost to zero.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that one of the best ways to use PEMF, and you need to have it, like it needs to be in your home. You know, yeah. You don't want to necessarily go to a clinic. You need to be able to use it every day without having to get up and drive somewhere. And that's the kind of the group of people I was targeting for helping, right? Is if you use it every day, you can keep the inflammation down. That keeps the pain way down. And with inflammation reduced, tissue can recover more quickly. Well, PEMF is not forcing anything to happen.
Yeah.
It's making the environment more permissive. And so when you don't have all this old person, you know, when you're getting your joints replaced, usually you're like 65, you're not like 15, right? So it's making the healing environment much more permissive. And everyone that I know that has tried it post-surgically has just had spectacular results. Let me tell you about my sister. My sister has type 1 diabetes. She also had a titanium rod put into her right tibia because she had a fall. And so she's diabetic and she's subject to like these lower leg, you know, ulcers and very poor healing and everything. So she's a teacher out in Colorado. She fell off a chair when she was putting up holiday decorations in November, and it wasn't healing. And they were actually telling her in January, February, they might have to take her leg off. So she and I worked together every day, and I was coaching her along. She's one of our systems. And all of a sudden, she started healing. And she went back, and her doctor, she was seeing a wound specialist at the time because they're trying to save her leg. They're like, oh, no, you're healing fine. This is great. Just whatever you're doing, keep doing it. So, okay. Is that statistical? No. But it's my sister.
Yeah.
Okay. And she responded the same way everybody else has responded. Hundreds of people have told me about this. It's the same sort of thing. She went from getting worse and worse every day to getting better and better every day. And it wasn't magical. It's not like she woke up the next day and everything was healed. But I personally believe, not scientifically, I just personally believe my sister still has her right leg today. Because she was using PEMF every day. Wow. She was able to heal up. And, you know, I've done other collaborative work with Dr. Pollock and other people, and they've been able to get non-healing diabetic foot ulcers to all of a sudden they start to heal. You know, I mean, it's sort of like you see something enough time. It's at that point you don't need scientific proof. What you need to do is think about, okay, going back to PEMF, how do I use this to help myself and the people around me? Because it's really a real effect. And a lot of scientists kind of focus on that. No, let's prove that it works. I'm like, first of all, scientifically, you can't prove anything. It's called strong inference. You say, well, I'm not proving it, but I'm giving you a little bit more data that's a little bit more suggestive. We've got thousands of papers that show PEMF has an effect that you can replicate. Okay, we don't need any more of that. We need systematic clinical studies that tell us how to use that tool, even if we don't understand why it works.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Well, I encourage you guys, if this sounds interesting, to check it out. You can visit the Flux Health form. You can go to the website's MicroPulse, correct?
Micro-pulse.com.
Uh-huh. Check out that. I think we've set up a discount. If you use the code URBAN, that'll save you 10% on any systems. And if you have someone that suffered from any kind of injury, pain, inflammation, TBI even, I would suggest doing some of your own research and popping into the forum, talking to people, because this is a good first place to start.
Yeah, we can point you towards studies, or we can point you towards people who've tried it. And some of them will say, I tried it, it didn't work. And others will say, yeah, I tried it this way and it worked really well. And that's kind of what the forum is for. And anytime we see sort of a bot on the forum, we kick it off. And it's just it's one of the forums that you can go to. It's not aggressive. It's very helpful. Everybody's really cool. And they seem to be honest about things. And there's no, you know, sock puppets there or anything like that. It's just, you know, you hear the good and the bad. It's a pretty good balance.
Bob, I have a couple questions before we start to slowly wrap this one up.
Okay.
Are there any major things around PMF facts or questions that I should have asked you, or it's important for you to share with the world?
No, I think you touched most of the important ones. And as people start to look at this, I think the most important thing to be thinking is, why not try it first rather than trying it at the end? Because many people come to me and they're just like, you know, I had a really close friend. He had end-stage cancer and he didn't even tell me about it until he's like, yeah, my oncologist told me that I just need to start saying goodbye to everybody. And he tried PEMF and he recovered, but he ascribed that to his Christian belief, and that's cool. I'm cool with that. But he had tried everything else and it wasn't helping, okay? Mm-hmm. And I can tell you about so many people who put PEMF at the end because it's a little bit obscure. It tends to be expensive. It's not convenient to use. And I try to fix those problems so that people can try PEMF first. And very often when they try it first, they don't have to try anything else, right? Yeah. So that's sort of like the big message I'd like to make. The other thing is, I have tried to read, and there's probably something out there that I'm missing, but I've read everything about PEMF in every language ever since it emerged in the late 50s. I have yet to see any reasonable clinical report of harm. So even with the really inefficient systems, too much power, you still don't really, PEMF doesn't seem to be harmful, as far as I can tell, because if it was harmful, people would be doing it over and over again to some poor animal and showing, you know, this is what's causing cancer, it's causing this, it's causing, you know, sepsis, infections, but it doesn't. It doesn't seem to, you know, just because it causes growth and development of healthy tissues does not mean that it causes bacteria to go crazy, does not mean that it causes tumors to grow. There's no evidence of that I can find in the literature. So, you know, can you say something is safe? No, you never can say anything is safe because the next day somebody will discover a way to hurt themselves with it. But I think that all the lack of harmful evidence for PEMF is remarkable. And it's, you know, 6 or 7 decades of, yeah, nobody's getting hurt, but gee, it's doing all kinds of wonderful things.
My favorite therapeutic modalities are the ones that that restore the body to homeostasis. It takes away any blocks preventing us from getting there ourselves, gives us a little gentle stimulation, but doesn't force certain outcomes, doesn't force certain pathways to activate and deactivate. And mm-hmm. from my research and what you're describing on PEMF, this is a great example.
I think this is a lot like an excellent diet or daily exercise would be, like mild exercise, like motion, just getting out of the chair, right? I think that those things put you in a state where you're permitting your body to do all the things it would naturally do well for itself without even actually pushing anything. And I think PEMF is one of the few things that I know of that doesn't force anything, doesn't seem to force anything. It just points your cells in a state where they're much more likely to do beneficial things.
Amen. Well, now we'll go on to one more question before a rapid fire round.
Okay.
Imagine that there's a burning of the books and all knowledge on Earth is gone. You get to save the works of three teachers that have influenced your work on the interaction between electricity and biology in general.
Well, one of them is Andrew Huxley, who you might know of. You can look him up on Wikipedia. He passed away a few years ago, but he and I actually got along quite well. He got his Nobel Prize for, he discovered how neurons work when he was younger. He's actually a mathematician, but he did a lot of work in biology. Like if you've ever seen those microscope images of like in vitro fertilization where they put a needle in a cell, he developed that system when he was studying neurons back in the 50s. And he was visiting the university I was at, University of Michigan, when I was doing my PhD, and he and I got on really well. We'd go out and have, you know, have drinks and talk about stuff and everything. He's a very, very famous scientist. At the time he was alive, he was easily the most famous scientist in Europe anyway, in the 90s and stuff. So he got knighted by the Queen, the same next to Paul McCartney, you know, is that kind of thing. Really cool guy. And what he did for me was he said, you know, Bob, when you do something that's really important, that you know is really important, he said, in science, you're going to be under constant attack. People will be constantly attacking you. He said, because A, they're going to have these belief systems that they're just really invested in. Some people are going to do it. A lot of different psychological reasons. And he just really encouraged me to do what I thought was important and not what everybody else was doing and what everybody else said was okay to do. So I'm kind of a little bit of an iconoclast among scientists, even though I'm very conservative. You know, I'm like, okay, do we know this or not? You know, how can we measure it? Can we measure it again? Can we repeat it? Can somebody else repeat it? So that's very conservative science. And yet I'm like, well, you know, let's give it a try. And maybe it works, maybe it doesn't. So I've gotten more open-minded because of Andrew Huxley, but I'm also much more resistant to negative. And I get a lot of negative from classical scientists who are like, you know, Bob, you're wasting your life.
All right, we'll do a quick rapid fire round.
Sure.
You ready?
Mm-hmm.
What are the biggest myths and misconceptions around PEMF?
Secret frequencies. There are none. There are ranges of frequencies that work better for some things than others. Tell you all about it on the forum. That would be one of them. Gauss power matters. Nope, that's just a locker room comparison. Doesn't really tell you whether or not PEMF works well. And hey, I can tell you exactly why it works in cells. No, you can't. Nobody can. I will give you a hypothesis. Other scientists might. But the thing is that, yeah, the myth of we know the biology, we don't. More power is better. No, it's not. Secret frequencies. Nope, no such thing.
Okay. How about stacking with grounding or earthing? Is that a practice that you recommend?
People that I know have tried it. I've tried it myself. And it's, I think it's helpful because it grounds out all that other background noise that you don't want. And if you use PEMF properly, so you're not grounding it out too, right? It's inside that grounding and earthing, like sheets and stuff. It's not outside them because it'll get grounded out. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it works well.
Okay, Bob, what's one thing that your tribe does not know about you?
Everyone who knows me seems to think that I'm in the opposite political camp. People who are really conservative think I'm ultra liberal, and people who are ultra liberal think I'm really conservative. And I'm just not political. I don't have very many opinions other than, you know, we need to sit down, think about this and figure out what's best for people. That's my political opinion. And it may or may not fall into, you know, but it seems like everybody that I know is so polarized. And then I have people saying, well, if you're not on one end or the other, then you're part of the problem. I'm like, well, I don't think that's true either. I tend to, you know, I spent a bit of time down in Austin where you're at. And, you know, I spent a lot of time in Ann Arbor, and I spent a lot of time down here in the conservative South. And I, no matter who you talk to, I'm on the other end of the spectrum.
Funny how that goes.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, any final words before we wrap this up?
Well, sincerely, I really want to help people who are interested in this, and I take the time to give them answers. So we'll put the link to our forum there, and it won't just be me, but there'll be plenty of other people who are knowledgeable who, if you have questions about this, are happy to answer them. A lot of the questions are the same over and over again, but you know, people keep asking reasonable questions. I suggest you go to the forum and just search on it. Search for keywords. If you're going to ask a question, just take the keywords out of your question, put it in the forum search, and you're going to find we've discussed everything many, many times. Mm-hmm. But if you want to ask the question again, you can, because sometimes my opinions change. Sometimes the information changes. You know, you're welcome to just browse through, or you're welcome to actively participate.
Thank you for creating that resource. And the links to everything we've discussed, as always, will be in the show notes. And I just want to say thank you so much for joining me today on the MindBody Peak Performance Podcast, Dr. Bob Dennis.
Thanks for inviting me. I really enjoyed it.
All right. Have a great week and be an outlier. Thank you for tuning in to this episode. Head over to Apple Music, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts and leave a rating. Every review helps me bring you thought-provoking guests. As always, you can find the show notes for this one at mindbodypeak.com/and then the number of the episode. There, you can also chat with other peak performers or connect with me directly. The information depicted in this podcast is for information purposes only. Please consult your primary healthcare professional before making any lifestyle changes.